RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
All right, this is RCR Tuesday morning. Nigel Jacklin is a British statistician, market researcher and independent analyst. He also stood as an independent parliamentary candidate for Bexhill and Battle in the general election. And we've asked Nigel on this morning to critique media coverage, polling and predictions surrounding the US presidential election. He's on X at the Good Stats Man. Nigel, thanks for beaming across the planet for a chat with us this morning. Hi, nice to have you.
Good morning.
Okay,
it's evening here, but morning there, yeah?
Yeah, I'm aware of that, so I won't keep you up too late. Though it's not that late, is it?
No.
Before we get into polling stats and all of that, what was the experience of standing for the general election like for you, Nigel? And who did you talk to? And did you get any sort of insight into how opinions are formed and how that could sort of move on to how we perceive polling and what the pundits are saying, et cetera?
So it's really something else. So we went into town centre regularly on Saturdays and just spoke to people as they were walking past. And in the actual election, only half of people of voting age actually voted. Mm. And most of the people that we'd spoken to had had enough. Some of them weren't even willing to talk to somebody who was standing in an election because they regarded me as a politician. But, you know, it's basically taken that the mainstream political parties no longer represent most of the people.
Yeah, it's a bit sad, isn't it? That's an interesting point you made about people not really wanting to, talk to politicians? What about how they feel, their opinions? Does that skew or alter the accuracy of, you know, professional polling, does it?
Yeah, so we were given a poll. I actually spoke at a conference about net zero, and we were given an opinion poll in which people were asked what was important to them and how they were going to vote. And in the poll, the number of people who weren't going to vote was quite low. So the first point is really that polls have problems engaging with people who aren't engaged with the election process. And then the other thing is whether they will actually tell you what they're really thinking or whether they can be bothered to answer the question properly. And how this correlates with who eventually turns up to vote, because the result of election depends on who turns up and how they vote.
Yeah.
And polls have problems kind of predicting that.
Is there anything in people actually subconsciously, I guess, telling a polling company, I guess, who contacts you, what the person being polled thinks the other person wants to hear?
There was a phenomenon here called the shy Tory voter, probably from, let's say, 8 years ago, two or three elections ago, which is slightly different. It's people not being willing to admit who they were going to vote for. I've seen stuff online like that people think they've been thrown off the YouGov panel because they were wrong thought or whatever. Mm-hmm. That's quite a strange one. But I think the bigger thing is that when people are asked who they're going to vote for 2 months before an election, they may not have thought who they're actually going to vote for. And when it comes to the actual election, they might have heard some information. They might have seen the candidates. They'll have a list of candidates, and the polls don't have that. So I've got some numbers, which I realize you won't be able to see, but there have been five polls here this month published about who people would vote if there was an election. And Labour ranges from 28 to 31% and Conservatives 25 to 29%. And the gap between them ranges from the Conservatives winning by 1% to Labour winning by 7%. So that just shows you that they've got a problem.
Yeah, we got a problem, Houston. Speaking of Houston, USA now. In the short time to the run-up of last Wednesday, our time anyway, it seemed that that most pundits, networks, were calling it kind of even, you know, 50-50, but it turned out not to be at all. So how do we explain that, even that close to the event?
So if you imagine that you had 100 people who were going to vote, who were supporting Trump, and 100 people who were supporting Harris, if all of the Trump voters turned up and voted, but only 80% of the Harris voters turned up and voted, then Trump clearly wins.
Yeah.
And in the middle, there's a whole bunch of undecided people. And if Trump won those over, and I just don't think the polls actually reflect those. And some of them were basically saying it's too close to call. It could be a Trump victory. It could be a Harris victory. But for some reason, they tended to decide to go for a prediction rather than saying we don't know.
That's a good point. Should there be more we don't know rather than making predictions? Because a lot of people are walking back predictions now, right as we are talking. Mm.
Yeah, it was very clear that there's a fair degree of uncertainty. And sorry, if you go back and compare polls to elections, it's pretty obvious that they don't have a very good track record of predicting them. So either they're generally rubbish or there's a high degree of uncertainty because it depends who turns up.
The effect of media reporting on the polls and you know, the positions people take in an election, like the one we've just had in the United States, there seems to be a little bit of a disconnect because the, and maybe that says more about where people are finding their media now, the cable news networks in the US, maybe Fox the exception, but all the other mainstream networks were, I think it was noticeably supporting Harris, it would be fair to say, and making all sorts of dire predictions about what could come from a Trump win. Yet that didn't seem to have, well, it seemed to have an opposite effect, actually. Mm-hmm. If you look at the popular vote margin and the states that Trump took.
Yeah, maybe people don't like being told what to do, or maybe half of people don't like being told what to do. I mean, I took exception. I was surprised. My wife woke me up about 8 o'clock in the morning because she watched the whole election. And I wrote the article that you saw in Conservative Woman sort of first thing because I'd seen The Economist and the FT, the Financial Times, basically saying, we support Harris. They were endorsing Harris. Now, I've worked for a long time with the FT, and I thought their job was to provide an impartial and objective account or assessment of things. I didn't think it was their job to say, vote for someone. And moreover, if they're saying vote for the person who lost, they're not doing a very good job of preparing people, are they?
No, and that's another walk-back situation. Do we see any of that? Has there been any sort of admission from any of the supporting media of Harris?
FT have done a bunch of stuff. I've seen some of it, which is basically saying... So firstly, their statistician did present two charts after the election saying, in future, we should do more of stuff like this where there was a range of predictions. So like what we talked about earlier. And then the editorial board have come out basically saying, well, that's a pity, as it were. We don't like Trump. I've tried to find out who the editorial board are. They seem to be a mysterious bunch.
Okay.
And The Economist were producing these very varied predictions. I think they said it was a 56% chance of Harris winning. But they're still off. And obviously there are, let's call it the charts people who make things. And then there's the editorial people who are basically still saying Trump's a wrong one or whatever.
As a statistician, I want to get your view on this. So in 2016, when Trump was first elected, it was seen as quite the victory. And, of course, there was the Russian interference and all those things. People remember all that. Then it came to 2020, and it looked like he was going to win on the night. But then Biden came back and ultimately got, I think, 10 million more votes than Barack Obama got some terms back. and somehow overnight won the election. This time you've got the numbers saying that the popular vote, I think he's 5 to 6 million ahead of Kamala Harris, and he won those swing states. Yet he won them with 10 million, it seems, or about that, less votes than Biden got in 2020. So something doesn't quite make sense to me. It could be because I'm not very good with numbers, but there was this huge spike in 2020, which maybe didn't accurately reflect the polls at the time. I can't quite remember. And now Trump makes what people are calling a substantial landslide, yet there are so many more less votes than in 2020 for Biden than there are for Trump now. I know it's a bit of a long-winded thing, but something doesn't seem sort of right there. There are votes that have appeared and disappeared in those two elections.
So here in the UK, the Labour government was voted in with a landslide, with 20% of people actually choosing them. So they won partly. It's a bit more complicated here because there are several parties, but they won because the Conservatives lost and people didn't vote for the Conservatives. And so part of what you described, I actually don't know the numbers, sounds to me like it depends on how many people turned up and how many people voted. So actually we had quite a good contest here in the general election. In the last one, there were four people standing. This time there were 10 of us. And that seems to have got people's interest. We had a higher turnout. So maybe in the middle election, people were more interested, people were motivated to get rid of Trump, and people who wanted to keep him were motivated to vote. And maybe this time the Harris supporters, the Democrats, just some of them didn't believe in her.
Right. And is that a decision that's made quite late? I mean, with your personal experience, that people, they see that, okay, she's probably not going to win. No point in me going and voting.
No point going to the polls. Yeah, and there were people who made their mind up in our election when they went into the ballot, the voting booth. But the issue with polls is much more fundamental than that. It's not last-minute changes in minds. It's just that they're not up to the job.
Okay. Is there any point in having them then?
They're quite entertaining. they may be slightly misleading.
Yeah, entertainment value. Okay, I get it.
So I did work with the newspapers. We had a review of the polls when they were so wrong, I don't know, 8 years ago. And the newspaper guy I spoke to was the lead negotiator for some of the contracts that newspapers have, for example, like on football rights. And he basically said, well, we're not going to pay for them anymore. They're too inaccurate. The pollsters quite often give them away so as they get their name in the paper.
Right, okay. So it's a pretty obvious result, the US presidential election, the outcome of it. And seems that most people are buying that the vote is legitimate. So in terms of what happens now with media and all of that, that seals it, doesn't it? You really can't argue against the numbers in the end, whether you are unhappy or not. It's just accept it and move on. Do you see that actually happening, or there's still kind of grinding of gears going on, obviously?
I think there will be a lot of people who don't like the results of this election trying to do whatever they can. But I think the media bit is rather interesting. So I did independent music about 40 years ago. We released our own music on cassette.
Oh, yeah. And cassette. Mm.
So I see the independent media a bit like the revolution we had in the music industry in the 1980s, where you had a lot of interesting music released independently. And we've got the same here with media going on at the moment.
Do you think it has a changing effect? People have mentioned that Trump went on Rogan. That made a huge difference. You know, 45 million views in 2 days. You know, the stats are huge and they seem to be larger than the now cable news networks. So can we, do you think, definitively say, in your opinion, that independent media now is where you win the votes or persuade, do the persuasion now?
I think it's big enough for independent media to have an impact. On the street, what was pretty clear to me is that in the UK, there are enough people who don't believe the mainstream media. They don't believe politicians. And so therefore, if they want something else, they're going to find out about that through social media or independent media. You know, they're just reading or listening to different things.
So it's a bit of a gloomy picture ahead then for mainstream, is it? Realizing you're kind of now irrelevant, that must be a shocker to them. How do you cope with that? They go off and cry somewhere.
They've been hanging in there for quite a while. I did work with the internet lot for quite a while. And in 2005, this chap called Bill Gates came over and talked to us. And he said that in 10 years' time, so in 2005, TV would be dead at this conference. So I went out, and who did I see on TV that evening? Bill Gates vlogging Xbox.
So he had a reason to say that.
I kind of did this project about the future of media, and TV it isn't as strong, but it's not dead. And so that was quite a good point for me. That's the point at which I concluded that Bill Gates was a liar who was in it for his own personal gain.
Okay, so your overall impression of what happened then last week as a numbers person, could you see the way it was going to end? Could you make any sort of predictions based on interpreting those numbers in the short time to the actual event? I'm curious.
No, I thought it was completely open. I didn't follow it enough to know what was happening on the ground, but in some respects it's quite heartwarming because the result depended on who turned up and how they voted, and the lack of respect, as it were, for the voice of the American people who voted is something I find quite disturbing. You may or may not be aware of this, but the Labour Party here in the UK sent people to America to help campaign for Kamala Harris.
Well, that's awkward, now, isn't it, when Trump finds out about that?
Yeah. Well, there were also quite a series of derogatory tweets by members of the cabinet, senior people that they're now backtracking on. And that actually, when Trump got elected in 2016, I believe that the EU weren't prepared for that eventuality. The predictions were he had a 30% chance of winning, and because the EU lot wanted Hillary Clinton, they just didn't prepare for a Trump presidency.
Same again, is it?
I think they might be more prepared. They might have learned their lesson, but I think the article I wrote was also about, let's call it, this unwillingness of people who've got it wrong to confront their failures or to realize that they've got it wrong. And that was there was the criticism of the pollsters. So the guy who I supposedly worked with, who ran the polls and ran this other contract that we ran, they totally messed up the other contract. But he turned his back on me when I was at the meeting about how did the pollsters get it wrong, because he was more interested in talking to people who would say we can sort it out. Now, their sort it out was to learn from the lessons of the past, but no two elections are the same. So if you correct the next one based on what went wrong with the last one, you'll just get it wrong differently.
Right. Now, I understand that. Just to finish up on, back to your part of the world, I've been watching with interest reporting on the popularity of Keir Starmer and his government, but more specifically him. Seems to have crashed. Is that believable polling?
Yeah. I mean, he's gone, I can't quote the numbers, let's say from +5 to -40. That's such a big thing.
Whoa. That's the elevator going all the way to the basement almost, isn't it?
Yeah, and it comes back to the fact that actually he wasn't elected by popular vote. He just won more votes than anyone else.
Yeah, okay, I got it. Yeah, on a very low turnout.
They're all unpopular.
On a low turnout.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he doesn't have charisma, and they do seem to be rather out of touch. They do seem to be introducing things and then backtracking, and they're also running a lot of Twitter things with slogans but no substance. And yeah, I think people notice lack of substance.
Of course, the first phone call from him to Trump or the other way around will be, if it's from Trump, how come you had your people helping the Democrats try and, mm-hmm, you know?
I think they've already had one of those nice phone calls, if you know okay what I mean.
I'd love to be a fly on the wall there. Mm-hmm. All right, just to finish up, Nigel, will you stand again next election?
I may stand in the local elections, but not in the general election.
Right. What, too traumatic, too much of a process?
Well, the result was fairly conclusive. I came 9th out of 10.
Okay. So, yeah, fair enough.
But, you know, it was very informative. It really, I spoke to about 1,000 people, so I've got a sort of idea of what people, where people are at.
Nigel Jacklin, British statistician, thanks for coming on our program this morning and talking about this. It's really interesting. Appreciate you making some time at the end of your day. Yeah, thank you, Nigel. See ya.
Okay, cheers, bye.
Hi, Peter Williams here. Are you on the RCR mailing list? Never miss a beat of the news and hard-hitting stories you've come to know and love. Stay in the loop. Visit realitycheck.radio/email or hit the join email button on your RCR app.